Welcome to the Leaders of Lasting Impact podcast. My name is Matt Pohl, founder of the Rewild Group. We believe that as a fundamental part of the human experience, that work is not only essential, it's valuable, that work matters. That's why we're on a mission to multiply the number of exceptional businesses globally. We want business owners and their employees to thrive at work. Thanks for joining us for another episode where we discuss stories of how leaders are having a lasting impact on small and mid-sized businesses. Welcome to the Leaders of Lasting Impact podcast. I'm Matt Pohl, your host. I'm pleased to be joined today by Ela Edgar. She is the founder of Big Change Inc. and is located in the beautiful Calgary, Alberta, just north of where we are here in Denver, Colorado. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes. As you know, the Leaders of Lasting Impact podcast is really focused on helping owners and leaders of small and mid-sized businesses. And that's why we wanted to have you on here today, because that's a shared passion that you have. And so we're glad to have you on here. You know, maybe what we would start off, it'd be best to start off with just a little bit of background about your professional background and how you ended up becoming a business advisor.
Mm-hmm. Great question. Thank you. Well, it certainly wasn't a straight path. Okay. There were definitely curves and valleys and plot twists and pivot points that I wouldn't have foreseen. So I started my career actually in the area of recruitment. Okay. I had the opportunity of being part of a startup airline, which in Canada is quite unique. We don't have a lot of airlines.
Okay.
Yeah. And so it was part of WestJet. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
I've heard the name, but I haven't flown it. Yeah.
And so as part of a startup, one of the really exciting things is that you get to be involved in a lot of different things, because there's only a few hands, but much work that needs to be done.
Yeah, sure.
So I remember I reported into the director of HR, and she said, we need help interviewing people. Can you come and help us? Uh-huh. And what I quickly realized and felt very comfortable with was that I have a natural curiosity about people.
Okay.
And I really love to listen and hear what they have to say. And so as a recruiter, although at that point I wouldn't have titled myself one, but as a recruiter, that's a really incredible gift to be able to truly listen and ask good questions to get out what someone else is trying to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so
that was kind of a pivotal thing for you, right?
It was
key discovery early in your career of what you were good at and passionate about.
Yeah. And that led me into, now I'm dating myself, because that was a 20-year career in recruitment where I was able to learn and practice and be part of, you know, high volume recruitment, mm-hmm. executive recruitment. So, you know, headhunting to marketing and advertising to technology implementation to strategy of recruitment. And that led me to a senior role in our University of Calgary here, where I manage the portfolio of academic recruitment, management, the management portfolio, so people that manage departments and areas in the organization, as well as unionized staff. So it was a massive portfolio.
Oh.
I had an amazing team that worked with me. And that's when I first bumped into this thing called leadership. I don't know if you had a point somewhere in your life where it's like, oh gosh, I'm in a leadership role and I think I could do a better job.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, if you are advancing right in a career, you get to that point where people are looking up to you, and right, there's often this feeling of inadequacy and what am I doing? And, you know I'm lacking more than I know. So,
Yeah. And that self-awareness, like, I think I need a few more tools in my toolbox.
Right.
Yeah. And so when you work for a university, at least here, there's often tuition support to take courses.
Okay.
So I happened into a course. One of my staff said, I'm taking this course. I think you might like it too. And being totally transparent, I didn't look at the description. I didn't look a lot into anything other than what was the time commitment and could I do it?
Could you do it, huh?
So I showed up a couple of days later to what I discovered was formal coach training.
Oh.
Never in.
At a university, they were having a class like that.
So a year and a half later, I was formally trained as a coach.
Okay.
But I never intended on hanging up a shingle and becoming a coach. I just thought, well, this is great. It'll help me be a better leader.
Right.
Yeah. And so, plot twists and pivots and decision points come. And now fast forward, working, I primarily coach, I team coach and work with small to medium-sized businesses on leadership development. And the tagline of Big Change is the human side of leadership.
Okay.
And so I really believe in authentically, like, who are you as a person?
Right.
And how do you lead in the most authentic way possible to you? It doesn't have to look like this.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing this kind of coaching, business advising, as a significant part of your profession?
Yeah, we're hitting the 10-year mark.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a
Yeah.
big change, I would say, from kind of university. Now you had a career in, like you said, recruiting before then, but
Yeah.
was that a big switch for you to go from that more working in that academic? You weren't Were you a professor at that time, or are you
No,
just in
no.
support
Yeah.
role, right?
Support role. Yeah.
So, I mean, you're in the academic market, but you're providing still an HR service, right, role. Was it a big change though, going to be in a coach, and how is the 10 years, have you been full time, or is there a kind
Yeah.
of transition?
But I think with many people who start a small business, there's a period of time where you're holding a full-time role and starting
Sure.
to develop, build, put more and more hours off the side of your desk. And so
Right.
I did that for a few years until I got to the tipping point where it logically made sense.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And has that been a good transition for you, and how?
It has been, not to say it's been easy.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I would say, exhaling in this moment, I'm so grateful to be where I am and to be able to do the work that I do. But it's definitely been a journey to get here. And I think, and I'd be so curious to hear your thoughts on this too, is I will have new business owners or people that are really interested in, I want to do what you do. How do I get there?
Right.
Well, it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, there's a lot of paths, right? Like you said, it's not a straight line. And yeah, I think one dynamic that I didn't expect when I started my first business was how much it would force me to learn. Right? When you're surrounded by an organization, you have an area of expertise, typically some specialization. And when you're out there on your own, you don't have the luxury. Well, you don't have that support, right? You are it. And it just forces you to learn things that you never would have wanted to learn or thought about learning. And it's not that you necessarily want to learn them, but you don't, it's not a choice. And it forces you to become, I think, a bigger, more well-rounded person because you are forced into that experience.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I joke a little bit that I'm a pictures and people person, right? I connect from the heart.
Right.
Put a spreadsheet in front of me and I'm going to go cross-eyed and probably, mess up the spreadsheet. The formulas aren't going to work. But that's something like in a very simple example, like we don't have a choice as business owners, especially when we're growing and developing. There's often not a lot of resources to go, I can contract this out or I can hire help in. In those
Right.
early years, it's very much, we're chief cook and bottle washer and kitchen and server and all of those things.
Yeah. Well, when you look at who you're working with today, are there particular industries or size of organizations that you tend to resonate with, that you tend to be kind of your ideal clients?
Great question. I actually purposely choose small and medium-sized businesses.
Okay.
I absolutely have had experience working with massive organizations. And definitely there's a benefit to the person or the team or the area that I'm working with, but it doesn't create the ripple that I really want.
Okay.
Whereas when we get to work with, a small to medium-sized business, and I'm thinking of a client, I've been working with them for about probably 3 years.
Okay.
And we work in small cohorts, so about 20 people at a time. But now, over the last few years, I've worked with well over 100 people in that organization, and their culture is changing.
Okay.
Because they're learning together, but in small enough cohorts that it's not a check the box training, right?
Sure,
We
sure.
really are learning about courage and vulnerability. Who am I as a leader? How are my behaviors impacting those that I lead, work with? So I think it's so powerful when we can help influence and help develop an entire organization, not just one little tiny pocket.
Is that really what you see as the difference between that small mid-sized business versus the large enterprise? Is when you talked about the ripple effect, is it that in the larger organization there's just so much more mass behind it, or what do you think is causes that inability to have as big of an impact?
Great question. I think it takes a pretty big scale to be able to have that bigger impact on a large organization. So, in partnership over the last few years, I did work with a large organization and about 25 other coaches.
Oh, okay.
And so collectively,
I
we
see.
probably touched 400 to 500 leaders at any given time, but that was still only a pocket in the size of this organization.
Okay. Yeah.
When you have 18,000 employees.
Yeah, how do you impact? How do you change that kind of an organization? Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of got this theory in my mind that, there's at some point, organizations get so big that it's almost impossible to keep them being an exceptional organization, delivering exceptional service. I just don't know how you control all that. I know some large organizations do it better than others, but to me, that's part of the value of the small, mid-sized business is there can be of scale that they're delivering a lot of value, but not so big that they turn into, this large entity that kind of loses, I don't know, but it loses its soul, but it's kind of like maybe it is that.
But I think we do. Sorry, not we, large organizations do at some point because they've become so large. And this is I say this so much love and respect for organizations out there. Nobody's perfect. No
Right.
organization is perfect. So I just want to say that. But I think at some point, does an organization get so big? And I'm doing this on purpose. I keep this on my desk all the time, and I have a heart behind me all the time, that we actually lose connection with the human beings that are helping us deliver the product, the service, the widget, whatever it is. And what's the impact when that happens?
Well, there's a loss of meaning, I would say, and fulfillment probably. And yeah, so there's some dynamics in there that had created, okay, I use the word soul, maybe that is part of it, that created this entity that has something more than just the widgets. And you may get so big that that kind of gets lost. Okay. What kind of when you think of the challenges that your clients are coming to you with, the pain points maybe, what's their struggles that they need help with? What are a few common themes that you see in that?
I would say one of the loudest or the most often theme that I hear about lately is around accountability, especially with the experience of the pandemic and
Okay.
hybrid working and remote working, and I don't have eyes on you.
Right.
You're not delivering. So accountability seems to be quite a large breakdown
Yeah.
for me. And I think where my specialization has gone probably in the last 5 years is really around breakdowns of trust.
Okay.
And so accountability is also a breakdown of trust.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a tie-in? Are those two sides of the same coin, or are they one causes the other, or they're just in the same family in your mind, those two challenges?
And I think for me, and again, because this has become a specialty for me, I joke that I wear trust goggles now, that
Okay.
often an issue or a challenge that an organization may be facing or a leader might be facing with their team, as they describe that to me, I listen that there's actually a trust breakdown or a trust issue somewhere gurgling, but they
Right.
don't often connect.
Connect the two, right? Okay. So they're describing these surface symptoms, and you're saying, okay, the root cause here is trust has been lost in some fashion. Okay.
And it's so fascinating because, I'm sure that you do this too with organizations that you work with. A leader comes to you, or an organization comes to you and says, here's the problem that we're having. And as you listen and do your discovery and actually sit in conversation, we hear other things that the leader either doesn't see, isn't aware of, and we can offer back that reflection. Like, I think that this might also be part of the tricky or the, what you're navigating.
Yeah. No, that's true. Why do you think outside advisors are able to sometimes pinpoint those things maybe quicker than the leader of the organization can? Do you have a thought on that?
All right. Well, and I see this in my own business, right? I'm so much in the weeds and in my business and in my own forest and in my own head,
Right.
right? And I think that's a function of humanity, that then we're so ingrained in our way of being, our habits, like what we know consciously and unconsciously. It's so valuable to have someone external say, hey, can I give you some feedback on what I see? Or have you ever considered this? And again, even for myself, and I don't know
Sure.
everything about everything, and I'm not supposed to.
Right.
So how valuable to have a different perspective, a different voice, a different skill set, a different knowledge source come and say, hey, Ela, I think that this might be really helpful for you, or this might help you, get to where you're trying to go, whether it's your goals or your outcomes or whatever, your vision, your dreams, whatever that might be.
Right.
It's so helpful to have that external perspective.
Right. When you're engaged with a client in providing your expertise and insight, do you have kind of a methodology that you're using? Is it something that you've just kind of cobbled together over the years? Do you kind of subscribe to any other kind of thought leadership that's out there in this space?
If you could see behind me, there's a full bookcase. I'm an avid reader. Actually, learning is one of my values.
Okay.
So I love hearing about, new thought leaders or ideas to consider or, assessment tools that might be helpful. So I would say I actually don't have a cookie cutter approach
Okay.
because for me, that doesn't work.
Right.
What I will say, and I want to give huge credit to, is the trust model that I use or the framework that I use is based on the Thin Book of Trust by Charles Feltman. And it
Okay.
is quite literally
A
a
thin.
thin book that
Okay.
you could read in an afternoon. Now I'm so fortunate. I have known Charles for many years. When I was introduced to his framework, it quite literally changed my life. I
Okay.
suddenly understood my own relationship with trust and why I did or didn't do things because of that. And I, again, I'm very fortunate now. Charles and I co-host a podcast called Trust on Purpose,
Okay.
where we unpack trust. And so, working with a client, depending on what they're looking for and what our discovery conversation uncovers, it often includes an element of trust. And so that might be an individual trust assessment, a team trust assessment, and then let's take a look at the data and see what conversations we can open. And how do we get you more towards what you're looking for? And so if accountability, well, then we focus on how do we dial up trust or increase trust to increase accountability? And more importantly, how do we have the conversations that we're avoiding because I don't know how to tell you that I can't rely on you and you're not delivering? So it really is the human side of
Right.
leadership and stepping into conversations using a framework that makes it doable. It's a common language
Right.
versus, because I would never say to you, Matt, I don't trust you. Like those words would never come out of my mouth. But my behaviors may be that I stop interacting with you, or I work around you, or I'm just not sure about stepping onto that project with you. I'm not as excited as maybe I'd be working with someone else.
Right.
And so when I can pay attention to that and actually figure out why and have a language to be able to say, Matt, here's the tricky. Here's what I want to be able to talk to you about because I care about our relationship, because I actually want to do good work with you. And so, could you spend some time with me? Let's figure out how we navigate this. Wh
Yeah.
which then, of course, ripples into every area of their lives because it's never
Right.
just a work thing,
Yeah,
right? It's never just a
you're
work
right.
thing.
You're right.
Yeah.
That's probably a deep-seated experience and background. A lot of things surely come into play there. It would be good for our audience. Our audience appreciates when instead of talking just about the ideas and the theoretical, I'm just talking about some stories where the ideas actually come into reality. And I'm sure you have some really good ones here, but obviously in confidence, could you share a story or two about a client where you feel like you had a really lasting impact either on an individual or an organization?
Oh, I love it. I love stories. So I'm thinking of one particular team.
Okay.
There's about 15 people in this group that I worked with. And we started with a team trust assessment. So that's done as pre-work. Their story and their narrative was, yeah, we don't need any help. We're good. We actually work really well as a team. Here's a couple of things we probably need help with. If you could do a little bit of facilitation and coaching on this, we'll be good. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay, sure, no problem. And so the day comes and I present the report, and there's always an opportunity. I always want to give an opportunity to say, go into smaller groups here, and what surprises you as you look at the data? What are you proud of? More importantly, what are you already doing well? And if there was one or two things that we could increase by 1%, thinking about James Clear and Atomic Habits, right? What difference would 1% make? And so really facilitating that conversation. I like to produce or create experiential learning. And so it's never, 87 PowerPoints and a workbook and you sit and just, so I want people up and moving and feeling. And so with this particular group, I had them stand in a line of where you think your relationship with trust is on this particular continuum. And so on one end of the continuum, it takes a really long time and you have to earn my trust. On the other end of the continuum is I trust easily. I give it. Now, if something happens, I may not keep extending trust, right? But I trust easily. So place yourself where you think you fall on this continuum. And then facilitating the conversation between what are the behaviors that you need to see, slow to trust, that will help you navigate and work with quick to trust. And Matt, it is fascinating because there's this visual and somatic or lived experience of standing in this line and looking at each other truly, A, recognizing, oh, I didn't know that you take a long time to trust. I assumed that you trusted the same way I did,
I do. Right.
right? Which is, again, a normal
That's normal.
human tendency. And so the conversation that this opened, and more importantly, how do my behaviors or my expectations around trust help, or how are they actually hindering? And so if I'm on the quick or lower to trust or take time to trust, I may be more guarded. And I'm doing this all right. I may be more guarded. I may be cautious. And when quick to trust Ela comes running down the hallway to say, oh my gosh, I'm so excited to work with you, this person may go, whoa, whoa, hang on. No. Now we might not physically do that or say those words, but that might be the internal feeling. And so that whole experience, just as a very quick story, opened up conversations they weren't having. Realization about each other and what they need from each other was profound. And we closed that day with, as a team, what are the things you want to commit to? What are the behaviors you want to commit to in order to increase and build even stronger trust? How are you going to hold yourselves accountable? What does that look like? And then they now have regular check-ins, which, I'll support it for the first few times. And now they do that on their own. And they openly use the language of trust. They openly have conversations. Now, of course, it's not perfect. Of course. But way more than where they were before. So, what does that allow? Greater collaboration. I can still lean in even when I disagree with you because we've built a foundation of trust.
Interesting.
It's okay, and I would pull in Timothy Clark's four stages of psychological safety. The highest level of psychological safety is where we can dial up our intellectual friction. So you and I can adamantly disagree because we're committed to solving this problem or getting to this outcome. It's not about dialing up social friction.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? And when we've got that foundation of trust, I can do that easier because I know you're not judging me as a human. You're not digging in because you're being a jerk.
Right.
You're actually putting your best ideas on the table, and so am I.
Right.
So, yeah, a little story about that particular group.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I can see some opportunities even in some of the organizations I work with, where that could be really, really useful. If you're sitting down with a business owner, small, mid-sized business owner, is there like a word of wisdom or just kind of something that's fairly universal that it might provide some value to that owner, kind of in your area of expertise?
What I'm realizing more and more, maybe as I get older, maybe a tiny bit more wise, I don't know. But really, and I believe we're all leaders. Leadership starts with self.
Okay.
We lead from self first. And so I get to, whether I have direct reports or not, whether I'm a formal leader or not, I get to choose how I show up every day
Right.
and how my behaviors impact those that I work with, that I love, that I lead, that I collaborate with. So I believe we're all leaders. I really firmly believe the biggest gift that we can give ourselves as humans and as leaders is the gift of self-awareness. And that pause to say, how are my behaviors impacting those that I work with? And is that what I want? Is it getting us where we want? Not me where I want, but is it getting us?
Okay.
And so, I'll give a tiny example. I think, again, this is probably a common internal narrative that happens for many business owners. I have a restless mind, and so I have lots of ideas all the time. I'm, writing notes to myself. I'm driving in my car and I'm like, oh, there's a good one. And I'm comfortable with that because that's my lived experience. But my team can sometimes hear that as I've actioned something that in my mind is still a possibility. It's a half-baked idea. I'm not
Right.
ready. I'm not ready to execute it.
Right.
So the self-awareness for me was, I have to be more intentional to clearly communicate to my team, I'm sharing this to you for feedback and percolating on it. It's still half-baked. There's no action required.
Okay.
And how I learned that lesson was my team coming and showing me work that they had spent hours on that I didn't need. And that's unfair and unkind of me. I own that,
Right.
not them.
Yeah.
And so that awareness about how are our behaviors impacting others is, I think, one of the most important things that we can do as leaders in our own development.
Yeah, and as a leader, as the leader of an organization, you know, that the span of ripple effect is quite large. So us being more aware of ourselves and how we show up, how we impact others does have a significant interplay with our organization. So no, that's great.
Can I add one tiny other piece?
Absolutely, absolutely.
How I came back to my team and apologized and owned that and said that's on me, that's not on you, was a trust building behavior.
Sure. Right.
Right?
Now that makes sense.
And modeled to them accountability.
Right. Okay. No, that's a great little putting the bow on that. That's well done. you know, I'm certain that we're going to have some business owners, business leaders that have heard our conversation that are like, okay, we need more accountability. And I think a lot of people are struggling, like you started off with, in the post-COVID hybrid, remote, all that environment has added a new challenge there. So I'm sure some will relate to that and are interested in how can they get better at that, because it's so, for most of it's so foreign. I joke, several of my grown children, they're doing 100% remote, and I can't even imagine doing that. I mean, I need to go to a place to work. And it's just weird how, it's kind of built into you. So I think, well, my point is that a lot of business owners, this is foreign to them. They've had to adjust to that reality, but now it's created challenges in their organization. So if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, what would be the best way for them to do that, Hila?
Yeah, I love it. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, Ela Edgar. My website is bigchangeinc.com. There's a contact me. My
Okay.
email is ilaela@bigchangeinc.com. And I think maybe as a taster or as a resource also, like find our podcast, Trust on Purpose.
Okay.
My personal values are generosity, connection, and learning.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, I think was going to say everyone wants to set up people for success. Maybe that's my rose-colored glasses. But I really have appreciated where people have reached out and been generous, either with their time or resources when I was struggling or when I was trying to figure out things in my business.
Right.
And so it's really important to me as a human to another human to be able to say, here's something that can be free and it's helpful. And if I can help in any other way, absolutely reach out to me.
Right.
But yeah, I think we all need, it takes a village not only to raise children, but to be a good human and support each other.
Okay. Well, great. So I'd encourage our listeners today to reach out to Hila if you're having challenges, pain points, just things that you can't quite seem to get past, that they just keep on reoccurring, and that you've heard something here from Hila that you might think maybe she has some tool or experience or a framework that can help you to overcome that area. So we appreciate you joining us for our conversation today on
Thank
Leaders of
you.
Lasting Impact. Hila, thanks for being our interesting and engaged guest here today.
Yeah,
And
thank you.
we hope that you'll reach out to Hila if she can be of value to your organization. And we hope that you'll join our next episode of Leaders of Lasting Impact. Thanks for joining us today. Matt Pohl here. Thank you for watching this episode of Leaders of Lasting Impact. If you're a successful business advisor, I encourage you to go to leaders.rewildgroup.com, where you can learn how to be a guest on our show. If you enjoyed the episode, please share on social media. You can also tag people that you think might be a good guest for our show. Just be sure to use hashtag Leaders of Lasting Impact so we can see your comments and suggestions. We release episodes on a regular basis, so be sure to subscribe to our podcast. Finally, we really appreciate your ratings and reviews. Those go a long way with promoting our podcast. It really means a lot to me and our team. Learn more about the Rewild Group at rewildgroup.com, or you can follow us on LinkedIn. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.